This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
From the Embassy Row studios in the crap part of Soho, very warm Soho, it's the Men in Blazers podcast.
The last podcast of 2015.
Oh, what a year, Rog.
What a year. We'll be discussing that in depth later on.
Yeah, on our What a Year section of our podcast, sponsored by Brute Aftershave.
Oh, it's the holy crap on the podcast. Yeah. So I'm quite excited. I'm really just playing for time because I've got a process and review.
Yeah.
And I'm processing and reviewing a lot, Dave, right now. I've got a lot of end of year kind of heaviness that's sitting over me.
Although you've seemed lighter recently.
It's because of the process.
We've sort of switched personality. You've become more other Rog.
And optimistic and positive.
And I've become alternate Davo. I've been dark recently, Rog.
Yeah, but do you know why I'm more upbeat?
Why?
Because I've surrendered. I'm totally.
Yeah, I'm in a fight,
There's a point where you're just so defeated by life.
Mm-hmm.
All you can do is just surrender to it.
Yeah, and enjoy.
But there's another reason I'm light and bouncy.
Yeah.
Because I've come to an end of year conclusion, David.
Which is?
I think I'm dead inside.
Okay. I could see elements of that. But what are you seeing? What are you noticing?
Just numb.
Yeah.
Dead.
Yeah.
Devoid of hope and feeling.
Yeah. And I like you dead inside.
I mean, we talked about it after BlazerCon.
Yeah.
Like, my immediate reaction was not to stop for a second and say, God, that was amazing.
Yeah.
It was just immediately to think about the next thing and to take no pride in anything.
Uh-huh.
My wife said, you might be dead inside.
Uh-huh.
And I thought about it a lot.
Mrs. B, a smart woman.
I thought about it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then yesterday,
something
happened that reinforced that sense.
Oh, yeah.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, she was a guest on Watch What Happens Live. The whole office, a Twitter,
came into
crazy.
The studio.
Yeah.
Producer Lexi was, honestly, if I say she was in a puddle.
Yeah.
And barely describing the extent of the...
I don't think puddles are that big.
I just think that the fangirling, but not like surface fangirling, to the core fangirling. And I was trying to understand it. And I started to talk to her about what that felt like to be close to another human being that you've not met before.
Yeah, she was so excited for her to be here.
Yeah. And to be so stressed about meeting someone and being in the presence of them and just the idea of them just being overwhelming. And she said, who would you fangirl over? And I couldn't think of a single human being, Dave. I could not think of a single human being who I would like, for instance, to get into the panic room. I love a lot of our guests and I do get excited about everyone we bring in. But someone who I just like absolutely... I mean, there were two people I probably would have fangirled over, but I met them both. Studs Terkel.
Uh-huh.
And Molly Ringwald.
Huh.
Done.
Who I can only think of two. Winston Churchill.
Oh, I knew you'd go there. I knew you'd play the Winnie card.
But you have to.
Yeah, bad news, mate.
He's
dead.
And Johnny Guitar Watson.
Guitar.
He always say, come here, guitar.
Yeah.
I love a bit of Johnny Guitar Watson.
Yeah.
Guitar Watson.
And anyone still alive, Dave, breathing, that we could literally rope in to the panic room, dupe them?
I don't know.
And what does it say about us, Dave? I mean, I'll say, I did put a short list together last night.
I'm in the entertainment business. I've met too many people, Roger. I book people on shows and produce them, so I've met most of the people I really admire.
Here's my list.
Yeah.
Le Carre.
Yeah.
Scorsese.
Yeah.
Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Oh, we met the other Shaggy. We haven't met him. Casey Kasem.
By the way,
I met him, though.
Not to be rude.
Before he died.
Not to be disrespectful.
Yep.
I only bought that Shaggy.
Yeah.
Because I thought he was the Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
I was
a bit bummed when he walked in.
Yeah.
Shaggy! That's Shaggy.
Yeah, I wasn't. I was delighted to meet him.
Philip Larkin. Solzhenitsyn. And Adolf Hitler.
Yeah.
But only so I could kill him with my own hands, the last one. That's it. Then I got a bit... really obsessed with this issue, staying up late last night trying to get a definitive answer. And last week, Dave, I had the honour of hosting the team awards for Team USA, the Olympic. Your amazing Olympic USA team in Philadelphia last week. It's going to be televised.
I heard you did an amazing job.
You must have been speaking to my mother. I tell you what was amazing. Many of the athletes, but in particular, David, the Paralympic athletes.
Yeah.
I met a woman, Tatiana McFadden, mm-hmm. who was born in a Russian orphanage
yeah.
with spina bifida.
Mm-hmm.
She unbelievably, and just by chance, got to move to America when a yeah. visitor to the orphanage connected to her emotionally yeah. and brought her back over here. And she's gone on to be one of the most complete athletes in this country. She was a wheelchair gold medalist, 100 meters, 400, 800, 1500.
Wow.
She wins marathons. Then at Sochi, she went back to the country of her birth.
Yeah.
She medaled in cross-country skiing.
Wow.
And that kind of tenacity, David, that kind of mental strength, I find that
amazing.
I think maybe Tatiana McFadden
yeah.
might be my Jennifer Lawrence.
Absolutely, Rog. But I would like to see you wrestling Adolf Hitler. I would enjoy that death
God,
match.
Honestly, I'd love Rog. To be able to do that.
Yeah.
I'd love to be able to kill
you
him.
You could Conor McGregor him.
If you're
I'd
listening.
I would love
I'd Holly that. Holmes him too.
Yeah, it'd be so good. Okay, the men in Blazers national team jerseys, Rog, they went on sale again earlier today.
Yeah, the last lot we unearthed from our Adidas.
Yeah. What happened?
It was a bit chaotic, I will say. It's the final instalment, and
yeah.
they sold out the beautiful tweed. It turns out that faux tweed
yeah.
is almost as popular as real tweed, David.
Yeah.
They sold out in 4 minutes,
wow.
our last allotment. So what we want to say is thank you to the GFOPs
yeah.
who got hold of them.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag beat San Marino. But I also want to say to those people who didn't get one, who are now
yeah.
emailing us, a limited edition is by definition a limited edition.
Yeah.
So that is the last one of its ilk that we are going to be creating. And I'm sorry for our suboptimal numbering. We did not know just how popular these beauties would be.
Yeah.
But now we need to work out what colour and what fabric exactly, Davo, the Men in Blazers national team away kit.
Oh, the away kit. We could do a third jersey as well.
Oh, I'm seeing a pink seersucker, Davo.
Oh, that would be something. Not sure that would sell out in 4 minutes.
And while we're on a business tip, David,
yeah.
I'll just say, as an end of year gift to our listeners,
uh-huh.
slight odd segue.
Yeah.
I've been cleaning up a lot in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I've been going through my files, which I don't do very often.
Yeah.
I've actually been making a slideshow for my oldest son, Samson. It's his bar mitzvah in January.
Uh-huh.
And going through my files, trying to look for photographs, I came across something unbelievably remarkable.
Uh-huh.
It's a song that GFOP, Alexi Lalas,
yep, back in the day,
recorded for us out of the blue when we were on Sirius in 2012, David.
Yep.
He wrote to us, he said, over the years,
the good I've years.
Contributed intro, outro, theme and jingle music to mm-hmm. numerous shows, podcasts, commercials. Most of it's unsolicited, but the fact is I love doing it and it keeps me sane. Attached is something I worked up for Men in Blazers. We used to play this song a lot, David. I haven't heard it in a couple of years. Let's give it a listen now.
It's so sweet and so good.
Watch out for the men in blazers. Yeah, they're looking good. They got it all worked out. Watch out for the men in blazers. Just kick back and let them tell you what it's all about. Yeah.
Oh, it ends right in the middle. It's like the Japanese national anthem, Rob.
I just imagine him. In his basement, drilling away with like a Dave Grohl face.
Oh, with his hair going wild.
The other thing I love about it, Dave, is in the middle when he does his own kind of fill vocals.
Yeah.
Whoa! I love it. Let's give it
like
one more
the
listen.
Kids in America. Let's go one more time, Lexi.
Watch out for the men in blazers. Yeah, they're looking good. They got it all worked out. Watch out for the men in blazers. Just kick back and let them tell you what it's all about.
It's got a bit of Joe Jackson to it as well, Rog.
It's the finest piece of music you'll hear today recorded by an ex-Serie A defender, David.
Yeah, it's very true.
I think it holds up as well as Echo and the Bunnymen, I believe, David. What
Superb.
A man. I love the way.
Superb.
That's got my blood pumping, David. Let's jump into
we're
the
gonna
football.
We're going to need your blood pumping, Rog, because we've got a packed show. We're going to break down league-leading Leicester City's 2-1 defeat of defending champions. They won the league? Really? And the brewing mutiny aboard HMS Jose Mourinho. We revel in Bournemouth's decisive victory over Louis van Gaal's army on the south coast, and we take Manchester City's pulse after a robotic sprockets-like win against managerless Swansea. Plus, England to play Wales. Wales, Rog.
Is that say to play or to get beaten by?
Well, probably both. It's implicit in Euro 2016. Stanford Messi wins a national championship, and Abby Wambach says goodbye. So much news, Rog. Okay, to the football. crack open the Guinness. Oh, I've got a nitro. Roger, I've got a nitro IPA. I'm going to have one of those today.
Oh, let me toast you, dude. To 2015.
Yeah.
I'm feeling dead inside.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, what an amazing weekend of games, Dave. It's probably the most exciting slate of games.
Yeah.
I've seen collectively all season. It felt like it was just amazing finish after amazing finish. And set-piece goal after set-piece goal. The Premier League, the best in the world, where no one, it seems, can defend the corner.
Yeah, no one. Certainly against Bournemouth. We are now 16/38 of the way through the Premier League season. That reduces, Rog, to 8/19 in this season of upsets. We're starting to feel like the indie bands we used to watch at bars are now topping the charts and selling out stadiums. We got to start right in. Leicester 2-1. Top of the table, Leicester City repel defending champions Chelsea in convincing fashion at the King Power Stadium, thanks to a duo that's as incisive as they are angular. Jamie Vardy and Riyad Mahrez scored their 15th and 11th goals of the season, respectively, as Leicester stayed 2 points clear at the top of the table. Chelsea, meanwhile, plummet to 16th, below both Bournemouth and Newcastle.
Disengaged, insolent Chelsea fall at a radioactive King Power Stadium on a night of magic, Davey. And it was all as satisfying and as astonishing on the eye as watching Vladimir Putin be beaten up by Jacob Tremblay. it was a case study in what total confidence can do for a collective and what the total disarming, undermining power of a culture of apathy can do to another team, David, because Chelsea, despite the fact that a nation of Arsenal fans were cheering them on,
yeah,
Chelsea just... I don't even know what to say.
I don't know, it's tough because, of course, we always have a tendency as these moments to have one team are amazing and the other team are absolutely awful. And I think it is a little bit of a disservice to Leicester and that performance to make it all about Chelsea's apathy. And we'll get to Chelsea in a second because there are problems we've seen before. But Leicester, the atmosphere at the King Power, it's like playoff basketball. You know, when basketball moves at a different pace, the atmosphere was amazing. And just their speed again and again and again took Chelsea apart.
Yeah, I mean, the King Power Stadium, it was a bear pit. It was absolutely electric. I'm not sure what King Power is, Dave. I know I want some for Christmas.
Oh, I'd love some King Power.
Oh, I'd love a load of it. I love
that. I've got a batch.
I love the grass, the way they cut the Magindovids, the Star of David's in, to just kind of throw Chelsea completely off balance before they took the field.
Yeah.
And I mean, they did look off balance before they took the field. You watched defending champions in the tunnel, Ramirez in for Fabregas to try and strengthen Chelsea down the middle. And by strengthen, I mean eliminate anyone who's not a complete liability. But then I saw John Terry standing there with two little nipples, hard as rock. And I know my nipples, David.
Yeah, you do. You're a nipple expert.
And those were plain as day.
Yeah.
Nipples of fear.
Yeah.
It was impossible to hide signs that JT was just terrified at facing the combined speed and menace of Mahrez and Vardy. And when they took the field and the Leicester crowd screamed, "Jamie Vardy, he scored more than you," a complete lack of fact and slight exaggeration, but it looked like it from the beginning.
Yeah.
Because Vardy, he was like a man possessed.
And not only up front, Rog, in midfield, at the back, defending all over the field, contesting every single ball.
Oh, contest he did. And by the way, many players would wilt under the pressure of expectation by now, but Vardy seems to thrive off it because Vardy was everywhere, on everyone. Early on, he intentionally took a stab at Hazard, the former player of the year who clearly must have chat in Walloon.
And he got banged.
Yeah, Vardy does what Vardy does. He banged him and it seemed innocuous. I said to you at the time, Hazard, it looked to me he couldn't wait to get off the field and abandon ship at the first chance.
Yeah,
he was Willis Reed in reverse.
That was an interesting moment. Calls his own substitution, it felt like. Mourinho questioned him. He went back on. He tried again, but he couldn't do it. I don't know. I'm not sure that the contact caused the injury. I think the injury was caused by the ground. It was that hip that he seemed to be, labouring with.
Mourinho said afterwards,
it's going to be interesting.
He made the decision, meaning Hazard himself, to come off after 10 seconds, throwing Hazard under the bus. And that was the difference to me, Dave. Vardy and Leicester, they had the hunger. And Chelsea had very little appetite for the fight for the first 75 minutes. And in this scintillating, vibrant, atmospheric battle, Leicester were just brilliant.
Yeah, they were brilliant. We've got to give one Chelsea player I think we'll give a pass to is Willian, who continues to be on
is
a
that
very,
the only
very
living boy in New York?
Yeah, the only... There's on a very, very poor team, there is one player who consistently, week after week after week, plays very, very well. But yeah, they were just out-muscled. Sometimes when a supposedly bigger team loses to a smaller team, what, as a fan of a bigger team, you sometimes think is, you know what, if they played that same game 10 times... the result would only go poorly once. I got to tell you, watching this game, Chelsea could have visited Leicester 10 times and they would have got beaten. They would have got beaten every single time. This was simply a better football team beating an inferior team in Chelsea, and a significantly inferior
and
team.
How they did it is also fascinating. Chelsea had 65% possession in that game. Leicester do not need it. I think only Sunderland and West Brom have had less possession than Leicester this season. But it's what they do with the ball that counts, Davo. And that opening goal.
Yeah, the opening goal. Apparently, Chelsea had practiced all week to prevent four moves. And one of the moves was exactly what happened on the first goal. I'm sure there will be better defences than Chelsea that could have been cut apart by this goal. But cut apart, Chelsea were. Mahrez takes the ball on the right. Just, he can do it with both of his feet. His left foot is just miraculous, though, Rog. He curls the ball inside, right between Zuma and Terry.
Statues.
Oh, my God. And the finish from Vardy. You're sort of a little bit taken for granted when you're marvelling over how good that pass was. But he just lashed it in off the volley, Rog. 1-0 to Leicester.
Vardy, the one guy they knew they had to mark. At BHall24 tweeted us, Jamie Vardy, he's the Rudy of the Premier League. If Rudy morphed into Reggie Bush in his senior year. I mean, Leicester had such a sharp edge, such an upper hand. I actually advised you at this point to start cheering for the team in blue and make yourself believe they were Chelsea.
Yeah, believe me, I've tried it.
Playing Spurs.
I tried that weeks ago, Rog.
But the moment for the game for me was when Vardy fouled Costa and then went chin to chin with him fearlessly. Yesterday's hero meets the man of the moment.
Yeah.
Who let them fight, referee?
Oh,
I'm going to ask you,
David. Amazing.
Who would win that fight? Because if you let them go, bigger money pay-per-view than Holly Holmes versus Conor McGregor.
We talked about this yesterday and we came to the conclusion that it would be whoever got the shiv out first, we believe, would probably win that fight. You know, I actually think that Vardy would be nastier in a fight than Diego Costa.
You know, this kind of debate is like the one that was triggered briefly last week when the fake news story came out that the Mexican drug cartel Los Zetas had declared war on ISIS.
Yeah.
Totally false, as it turns out. But the mainstream media briefly began to think about how that fight would go down.
Yeah.
And I thought about that when I watched Vardy and Costa square. I've got to say, I'm total team Vardy on this one.
Yeah.
Having grown up in pubs where there was one Jamie Vardy in every pub, normally somewhere around the fruit machine.
Yeah, or the pool table.
With a wrap of speed in his pocket.
Yeah.
Just looking for a fight if anyone knocked into him and, quote, spilt my ale. You've spilt my ale. Totally team Vardy. I've seen it. It's horrible. It is ugly. But by the time the halftime whistle went, ragged Chelsea, they were just full-on Theon Greyjoy mode at Trentacular 10. Reek, reek, it rhymes with Loftus-Cheek. And as you said, Willian, the only guy who really seemed up for anything. Less than the first half, Chicago Fire fans, why not you next season?
Yeah, absolutely. They go in at the break. Chelsea comes straight out. And then they concede the second goal you can't afford to concede. A switch of play, Rog, that was...
from old Brighton.
I think this was actually one of the only things that Leicester didn't execute perfectly during the whole game. It wasn't a particularly incisive or fluid switch of play. Chelsea, static, statues. Again, they allow Mahrez to take the ball in the area. And yes, I know that they're meant to put two men on Mahrez in the area, but Dave just got routined. He got posterized. He got completely shown up by Mahrez. Cuts onto his left foot. Smash.
Oh, Mahrez, Algerian Jordan Morris. Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Got to ask you this incisive question, David, the one everyone in football's asking. Who's going to play Riyad Mahrez in the Leicester City movie?
I know. There's some contenders.
Everyone said, by the way, seriously, the Hollywood Reporter had an article about how Leonardo DiCaprio, Leo, is thinking of playing Chuck Get Banged.
Yeah, beers on the coach on the plane.
I can't quite see that myself, but that's who's being lined up. So who's going to play Mahrez? Because they are not a two-man team. We've got to cast all Brighton, N'Golo Kante, Schmeichel, all of these guys.
Oh, Schmeichel, they're back line, Rog. Where's Morgan? Huth, fantastic, Fantastic games.
I'd love Zan McLaren, Hansi from Fargate. That would be my pick, Hollywood. But I've got a feeling, even though the role should go to Aziz Ansari, born to play Mahrez, I definitely realise Hollywood, how it works. It's going to be Oscar Isaac, Pocket Clooney. He gets
Star Wars right now. Yeah.
But they're not a two-man team, Dave. And the thing that's fascinating to me, Vardy, $1.5 million he cost. Mahrez, $529,000. Together, they cost just over $2 million. N'Golo Kanté was playing 8th division football in France 5 years ago. Leicester's legacy, Dave, are ultimately maybe the way they changed scouting in football. But then the game did change. 53 minutes, humiliated John Terry gets the hook.
And Chelsea go to a three-man back line. This will get severely diminished by his post-game comments, but actually a very good move from Jose Mourinho at this point. John Terry having a nightmare of a game against the speed of Leicester's front line, mid line and back line. They pull him out, go to a three-man back line, and certainly with the amount of possession that Chelsea had versus the counter-attack, they did very, very well at that point, and they looked like a very different team.
Diego Costa snuffed out by the brilliant, underrated Schmeichel. Ivanovic found himself right in front of the open net and decided to pass the ball sideways.
Yeah.
But then Barcelona's Pedro reappeared, muscle memory.
I know, we haven't seen him for a long time. He came back, fantastic ball into the centre, and the other move from Mourinho, bringing on Loic Remy, Rog, he heads it into the goal. He's obviously auditioning for the January transfer window, seeing if he might go and back up Vardy and Oshoa at Leicester.
When that ball went into the net,
yeah,
they've not really replayed it, but Costa chose that very second to nuzzle into Kasper Schmeichel's ear.
Yeah.
You thought he was saying how much he admired him as a goalkeeper and as a human being.
And admired his father.
MG Mangold thought via Twitter, he said, try and save the next one, for God's sake, Schmeichel. We want to get Jose fired. But Leicester definitely fluttered. Mm-hmm. Not being able to hold on to the ball became less a strength, more a slight tremor of panic.
Mm-hmm.
But it was all a bit Scatman Carruthers in The Shining, kind of a rescue attempt, because at the final whistle, the blood surged through my veins with joy.
Yeah.
What a game football is. What a contest. What an atmosphere. I felt alive briefly, David.
Yeah, that's amazing. It would have been cruel. I mean, had Chelsea found an equaliser, it would have been an unjust result for the 90-plus minutes of football. And you know what? Better teams than Chelsea, and there are many of them in the Premier League, will go to Leicester, and when Leicester play like that, get beaten. I mean, Watford, for one, a much better team than Chelsea, have gone there and got beaten. I think that not many people are going to want to go there in the evening and go and play.
I began to wonder, watching this game, how much of football is just packaging. Great footballers are just context, and mediocre players can rise in the right conditions. But looking at the Chelsea players in their jerseys lined up against these Leicester ones who were just so exuberant, so joyous. We're going to win the league, bellowed the Leicester faithful.
And why not?
In this, the most unpredictable Premier League season of all time, why not Leicester City? Davo, their next games against Everton and then Liverpool and then Manchester City. And injuries and the Christmas schedule.
Yeah,
why not?
Look, you have to say why not. Of course, there are many twists left in the tale. The writers are going to have that for us. They'll probably have to deal with injuries. They're going to have setbacks. But every contender for the Premier League this season has a flaw. You know, the robotic, you know, paranoid, schizophrenic nature of Manchester City. Man United, the offensive, you know, weakness. Arsenal, the sense that...
A month off.
Yes. And Liverpool grinding out results suddenly at home, a better away team than they are a home team. Tottenham, they're suddenly the unbeaten streak gone. Everyone has a flaw. Leicester have less flaws, other than one assumes the depth of squad. But who knows in this Premier League season that Vardy or Mahrez goes down and somebody else doesn't come in?
I would love for Leicester City's thrill ride to continue deep into the season. Anyone who supports a team outside of the Big Four cannot fail to look at them with admiration and gain a sense that why not their team too?
I think it's more than that. I've got to tell you, even somebody who supports a team in the Big Four or a team that used to be in the Big Four, Rog, if you love watching football, and I love football, Rog, I love football more than just about anything. You know, we were watching that game together yesterday. I was on a conference call. Fortunately, that call was going well, much better for me than Chelsea's performance in that game. I was loving watching Leicester.
He was selling pork bellies, if you must know.
It went very well. I was loving watching Leicester play, and I think anybody who loves football is going to
tell you this. No team with 35 or more points after the first 16 games has failed to finish outside of the top four, which augurs well. I find that if you ran Leicester City right now and you got the transfer window approaching.
Great question.
Do you hold on to your assets? Do you double down, bring in more, or do you sell while the price is high? I mean, you look at Vardy, 28 years of age, what the price for him, a free-scoring centre-forward, is in world football, not cup-tied right now. Mahrez too. I mean, European powers are looking at this complete player, young, an incredible sell-on value. The numbers being attached to them create a question, not to burst Leicester's bubble at this fine moment, but it is the romance at the King Power, let's go for it, or is there a dose of business acumen and realism, David?
I think you've got to hang on, and I think you've got to hang on partly because you're Leicester. You're not Bournemouth, you're not Burnley, you are Leicester City. You're a team that actually in the Premier League era has done very, very well in the Premier League. Under Martin O'Neill, they had some very, very good seasons. With all the new Premier League money, Rog, it's possible for these teams to do better, longer, to compete harder with the so-called Big Four. And with the manager that they've got in, with his level of experience, with this team, with this strength from front to back, get into Europe. Get into Europe and let's see how far you can go and take this ride. Why not Leicester?
At Augie Hayes with a dose of realism. Do you know just how many bags of Vardy salted crisps they could get for Mahrez right now? But Ranieri, Creed from the office, was pretty adamant afterwards. Nobody can buy them. They don't have the money. They, Vardy and Mahrez, don't have a price. Leicester City stormed back to the top of the table. 1-10, drawn 5, lost 1. Chelsea's title defence, 1-4, drawn 3, lost 9. Davo, 9 games. And at the end, Jose Mourinho, last season, I did a phenomenal work. I brought them, the players, to a level that's not their level. More than they really are. Oh, my God. He's aged in the way only US presidents age when they're in office, David.
Yeah, he sounded somewhat insane when he was saying this. I mean, I actually watched that press conference when he was talking, and he actually, as he was saying it, the larger thing he was saying is, I'm as confused as anybody. I don't know how to go and deal with these players anymore. That's perhaps the more shocking part of it. Maybe last year, like, you know what, I managed to coach them, that they weren't as good as I thought they were. How can this team, who were that good last season, be where they are this season? The only thing I can think, there are two rational explanations. One is something has gone on behind the scenes, which we have no idea what it was, and it was insane. Or secondly, this is my new thing.
A third is an act of God. Of course, God exists. Okay, God reward exists. And punishment. Karma. Do you believe in that? No, you've got to put it out there.
Yeah, I got you. Okay. The second thing for me is that Chelsea simply weren't a very good team last year. And it's not that they don't have good players. They have world-class players. But the football in the Premier League, and you said this a lot last season, that it was the crappiest football you remembered seeing in the Premier League last season. And I have a feeling that last year's Premier League was, to some extent, the outlier. We saw very crap football and a pretty crap team altogether went and won it. Because the second this team have been mentally challenged, this was a team that we felt won it because of mental toughness more than phenomenal skill. The second they've been mentally challenged, almost to a man, Willian excluded, they have buckled under.
I'm thinking about your reason number one, and I'm just mentally picturing scenes from Showgirls. So I'm going to jump to mine.
I love that film.
Number three.
I love that movie.
An act
underrated.
Of God. God exists. Karma, yeah. karma, chameleon for Jose. Got to get this to you.
They wouldn't have won so much if there was karma.
Relegation fears out of 10 for you and Chelsea Football Club now. 10 meaning Brad Guzan levels. 0 meaning Tony Pulis have never been relegated levels.
Do you know what? I want the season to be over so much, I don't even care if we're relegated at this point. And I actually feel that we've got a better chance of competing in the Championship. So I don't really have relegation fears.
Championship's a very tough league.
It is, but we might not finish bottom of it. And I think we have the ability to finish bottom of this. Or maybe 19th.
Chelsea Football Club are not going to get relegated this season.
They're in a relegation battle, though, Rog. There's no doubt. This team, I look at the teams above them in the table. I do not see a single team above us in the table who we are better than. We cannot say that we're better than any of those teams. Are we better than Swansea City, who are below us? We didn't look better than them at home at the beginning of the season. Norwich, we scraped a win against 1-0. Okay, Aston Villa we beat. Sunderland, Big Sam now. They could be better. Chelsea are in a relegation fight. They're in a relegation fight. The table does not lie. 16 games played, 15 points.
Last word for you from at Joel Source. Children across the US currently struggling to spell Leicester jersey on their newly revised Christmas list.
Yeah, it's a difficult word to spell. Okay, another upset. I can't believe that this was not the first game.
It's jersey as in New Jersey, same spelling.
Bournemouth 2, United 1. A game that catches
this. Read that
this
again, I love it.
Bournemouth 2, United. That's Manchester United 1. A game that captures this Premier League season milieu the way Alfred Eisenstadt's photo of a sailor kissing a woman in Times Square conveyed the mood on VJ Day. 1 week after beating defending champs Chelsea, the Cherries down Louis van Gaal's army in front of a raucous 11,000 at the Vitality Stadium. Goals from Junior Stanislas, that's an English player with a foreign-sounding name, and Joshua King, a foreign player with an English-sounding name, move Eddie Howe's men into 14th place. United remain in fourth, but slip to 6 points off first place, Leicester.
Louis van Gaal's army, an army of one, as the old commercial used to say. Good news, United fans. Your team scored a goal. Bad news, you got beat by a team most Americans confuse still with Broadchurch. Here's the true ugly for United fans, Davey. 3 wins in 12 matches, 10 goals scored in that time, 2 cup failures since mid-October, including the Champions League exit at Wolfsburg. And van Gaal, I mean, this man's tenure at Old Trafford, I think, is going to be the perfect storyline for Serial Podcast Season 3.
Bournemouth, terrific in this game, though, Rog. And too much dwelling on Man United and their offensive inefficiency, their ludicrous defending of corners, would take away from how well Bournemouth played in this game. I actually think that the scoreline 2-1 is a little bit kind to Manchester United.
Well, I mean, before the game, the storyline was always going to be about United. There were stories of immense player discontent oozing out of Old Trafford after the loss in Wolfsburg, in which van Gaal substituted Juan Mata for the raw and proven Nick Powell.
Nick who?
Yeah. I mean, the 3 months he assured it would take him to figure out his grand bold vision and strategy, that was back in July 2014, are long gone. And before kickoff, the United injuries and suspensions meant he had to choose a team with 9 of his first choices out, albeit against Bournemouth, who have about 28 players missing from injury.
So true.
And he had to field Guillermo Varela, Patrick McNair, and your favourite, Cameron Borthwick-Jackson.
Oh, I love Borthwick-Jackson. I have no idea who he is, but I love him.
I think he's friends with Saifo Zungo and Riza Pratama from the Chevy commercial. But this was the 6th youngest United lineup ever in the Premier League era. 24 years of age, 9 of the starters were under 23. Mm-hmm. And they played a Bournemouth side who just valiantly play, pass and move, ambitious, optimistic football. They're like a Sanyo flat screen television that's clearly built with inferior components like West Ham wash-up Junior Stanislas, Newcastle reject Danny Gosling. But they're admirable. They're gutsy. They never say die, Davey. And their opening goal, the Olympico.
Oh, my God. Straight from the corner. Stanislas, his corners have been devastating. The movement of the Bournemouth players from corners has been just brilliant, Rog. He puts it straight in over De Gea, a goalkeeper not prone to these kind of errors in the last few seasons.
And Stanislas, the goal scorer, then dropped to his knees to dedicate the goal to Harry Arter, remarkable bloke, and his family, who lost the baby during childbirth this week.
Tragic.
Remarkable moment and a tribute to the family culture that drives the Bournemouth miracle. United had no room for sentiment, looking to break through immediately. Fellaini forcing Boric into a magically athletical double save.
Yeah, fantastic couple of saves.
On the subject, Davo, of Artur Boric's neck tattoo.
Yeah.
Country music's Dave Barnes, known to many GFOPs by his hard-living alter ego Killer Diggins.
Yeah, we love that.
He wrote to us, he wanted to know where we think Boric's tattoo actually stops.
Yeah.
Does it go full body?
Yeah.
Right down to his toes. At Dave Barnes Music tweeted, he said, I'm interested in the potential of one long sentence running down to the foot, and particularly what the sentence says. Is it Dr. Seuss?
Yeah, there's a songwriter looking for inspiration, Rog.
God, I'd love that if Killer Diggins...
Yeah, could record the lyrics from Arthur Boric's tattoo. That's a hit single, Dave. That is a hit single.
I smell a hit, killer.
I smell a hit.
Oh, but United struggled. Mata in the number 10 role, nullified by Bournemouth, suffocating United with their defensive high line. And it took 20 minutes or more before United worked out how to crack it. by lofting diagonals towards the athletic toilet brush, Marouane Fellaini.
Yeah, and he went to the Belgian Ministry of Silly Walks for this goal, Rog. He's down on his knees, he's up again, he's down again, and he taps it in. World-class crap goal.
Oh, it's like he reenacted William Dafoe in his death scene at the end of Platoon before trickling the ball home. But oddly enough, that equaliser, it didn't galvanise United, Davo. Instead, their inexperience mutated into giving Bournemouth just too much respect. It was like watching the Russian army get bogged down against the Mujahideen.
Yeah.
Global brand undone by a team who were barely big in their own city until last season. I mean, as you said, they weren't just beaten by Bournemouth. They were outplayed by a team that pressed and pressed, never stopped running, thinking, moving, believing. And Josh King.
Oh, Josh King, Rog, the young Norwegian. The Norwegian with the English-sounding name. That move from the Matt Ritchie corner. I mean, you could try and execute that 100 times in a game, and I don't know how many times any other team would pull it off.
But it's beautifully, straight out of the NBA.
Beautifully executed.
It was like an inbounds pass with a 0.7 seconds left on the clock in an NBA playoff game. There were screens, there were picks, all a bit Draymond Green. For the one-time Manchester United Academy talent, who only made one appearance for the senior team, and the Bournemouth fans just screamed, "We're AFC Bournemouth. And we come from League Two."
Yeah.
"We're AFC Bournemouth. We come from League Two." What must have been going through Van Gaal's mind as he watched all of this?
Well, you know, sitting there with his clipboard and his two assistants, I would love to hear what they're talking about. Like whether they're musing on sort of advanced football, you know, UEFA coaching badge terminology. But it's a... he just had no answer for that kind of energy. And that, for me, is something which... you know, that word, energy, Rog, it is about Leicester, it is about Bournemouth, it is about Watford. It is something very, very new, and not just for a little spurt of 10 minutes. We're seeing 90-plus minutes of energy from these teams that the big clubs, with their big star players and their sort of intelligent academic managers, seem to have no answer for this kind of energy.
I mean, at the end of the game, Harry Arter and Eddie Howe hugged on the field, a beautiful moment of emotion and leadership and everything that's good about football and about Bournemouth Football Club. It's why we watch sports. It's honestly why we live. But you look at United. Josh Pardy tweeted us, "At this point, there's probably more upset United fans in Micronesia than there are Bournemouth fans total." And you think about this global brand. Whenever I look at Van Gaal, I think of Francis Ford Coppola's quote about making Heart of Darkness. "There were too many of us. We had access to too much money, too much equipment. Little by little, we went insane." And I see a man who can't score, and he sees Chicharito scoring a hat-trick. He sees Angel Di Maria just pulling in assist after assist. And he has to bring on Phil Jones for Paddy McNair in search of a goal in the 91st minute.
Yeah, I know, that was amazing.
And he said after the game, "No club holds a divine right to win anything," which shatters the core proposition of the United brand that's made them a global juggernaut, Davo, that they have world domination, that they can always unfurl attacking flair, that they're a winning team. What was once seen as confidence and genius from him now comes across as just arrogance and borderline stupidity. He says, "We're doing better now than we were this time last year." He seems like a wounded animal, David. And the run of results over the holiday period is a must for United if he's going to fend off lame duck status.
And yet, they sit in fourth place in the table. They've conceded only 12 goals all season, less than anybody else in the Premier League. Just 3 points behind Man City, just 6 points off the top of the table. They could still win the league, Rog. And if form... you know, 20-plus years of Premier League form as any guidance, very often the best defensive team in the Premier League wins it. Got to think they still stand a chance if they can just get any kind of offensive spark whatsoever. Okay, Rog, the other side of Manchester, equally confounding. Manchester City 2, Swansea 1. After allowing a 90th-minute Bapatembi Gomis equaliser, remember him? Yaya Toure awakes from his game-long slumber and fires a shot off Kelechi Iheanacho and into the net. City stay third, 1 point behind Arsenal, 3 behind Leicester. Tough to watch, though.
Oh, how quickly fortunes can change in the English Premier League. Back in September the 5th, The Guardian ran a feature entitled "Gary Monk, the Swansea workaholic could be made for the England job."
Wow.
And now he's gone.
Yeah.
And Swansea...
he dodged a bullet.
Swansea on the cusp of the relegation zone. As every foreign manager, including Marcelo Bielsa, the legendary Argentinian tactical maestro slash unfathomable hothead is connected to the club. It's amazing to me how a team that have been touted for the past two seasons as a model for all small size aspirants in the Premier League can suddenly rot and just charge into a free fall. But this game began as every Manchester City game began, with Joe Hart speaking in tongues in the tunnel.
Yeah, it was a slightly more restrained Joe Hart in the tunnel.
Self-reflective.
Yeah, and he limited himself to just one expression.
And that last expression was?
Bony goals, bony goals, bony.
Come on, bony.
Come on, bony.
And when Joe Hart says jump,
yeah,
Wilfred Bony says, how high?
Yeah, 26th minute from the Jesus Navas corner. Goal for Bony. And the most joyless celebration in all sports history, I would say.
Sometimes football stops being a passion and becomes just a job of work. Yes, yeah. Bony, until January, was a Swansea player, but the other City players surrounding him
looked equally joyless.
Yeah, the lot of them.
Actually, more joyless.
They communicated all the joy I'd imagine Imperial Stormtroopers experience when they play footy. I find it fascinating watching City, because they never look like a team of players that enjoy their football. You do not see a lot of City players smiling in-game, laughing with each other, opponents, officials.
I think Kevin tries to, but it's like, poor Kevin. He's being ostracised.
He's been dropped for that.
I know, he's smiling. He's been shamed.
It's off-brand.
Yeah.
They play with a grim determination matched only by Team Iceland in Mighty Ducks too.
Yeah.
Swansea had their chances. They kind of tried to fling the ball around like an ultimate frisbee team. Mm-hmm. Joe Hart, he was, I have to say, outstanding throughout this game. Parrying, diving. He does all his own stunts, David.
Yeah.
But he could do nothing about Gomis's 90th minute shock equaliser.
90th minute. Late equaliser. Gomis was so shocked himself, he didn't go for his trademark celebration run.
It's been so long since he scored.
I know, he forgot it.
But football, it's a cruel game. 90 seconds later.
Oh, my God, the shot from Yaya Toure. It hits Kelechi Iheanacho. Knows nothing about it.
Yaya was trying to do what he normally does in the 90th minute of a football game, which is blast the ball wildly into the crowd.
Yeah, exactly.
But it hit his teammate.
On the back, and goes in.
Manchester City win, but they remain harder to watch on television than the Men in Blazers show, which is saying something.
Yeah, and yet may well win the league. Talking of may well win the league, Aston Villa, well, not them, nil. Arsenal 2. In this season of shock and upset, Arsenal proves that routine win is still a thing. An 8th-minute Olivier Giroud penalty and a 38th-minute blitzkrieging counter-attack that ended in an Aaron Ramsey goal. Keep Arsenal in second place. 2 points behind Leicester. The lifeless carcass that is Villa, still on 6 points.
How quickly narratives flip. After a November staring disaster in the face, losing to Dynamo Zagreb, dropping points at Norwich and West Brom, Arsene Wenger emerges unscathed from Champions League play after a magical comeback.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Olivier Giroud remains the most handsome elite footballer in the league. Joel Campbell plays better than anyone in the world when a baby's pacifier has been inserted into his undercarriage. And Arsenal.
Terrible chafing.
Are winning for fun in games like this one, where the result's never in doubt.
Yeah, well, a lot of teams have beaten Aston Villa this season, even Chelsea. That was at home, not away.
It's the only given in football.
Yeah, but it was a...
winless in 15 league games.
It was a good win for Arsenal. Penalty decision a little odd. Referee Kevin Friend seemed to change his mind after some pleading from Walcott, but I think it was the assistant ref who called it in.
Yeah, I think Kevin Friend wasn't sure if dry humping Theo Walcott is or is not punishable.
Used to be allowed.
Yeah, but Hutton brought shame to all balds by giving that one away. And Giroud stepped up, 4th goal in 99 minutes of football.
Yeah.
His 50th goal for Arsenal, 3rd quickest to hit that mark after Thierry Henry and Ian Wright, which actually many Arsenal fans have used as evidence that Arsenal should have brought an elite striker. The lack of people who've caught up with those two guys actually diminishes their lack of faith in Giroud, which is a very interesting argument to make. But Villa, they were borderline shambolic. My seven-year-old watched quietly and then told me at halftime that the only occasions Villa had possession was when they hacked the ball desperately away from their own penalty area. The second goal, though.
The second goal. It's the kind of goal that Arsenal used to concede, Rog. It started with a tackle, Rog, in defensive midfield from Aaron Ramsey. Started it, Ozil involved, Walcott involved, Giroud involved, and ends up coming back to Ramsey from who else but Ozil, who had a chance to put it in the net himself, and Ramsey scored.
13th assist of the season, for Mesut Ozil. Excellent return from 60 matches. He had a 3-1. That one man was Lescott.
Yeah.
So surely Ozil must score.
Yeah.
But Mesut Ozil is a highly evolved man who prefers the sophisticated thrill of an assist over the crude orgasm of goal scoring. Mm-hmm. Slipped it to Ramsey, who started the move, and Ramsey finished. What a different player Aaron Ramsey looks now. He's been shifted into his preferred middle of the field position. More mm-hmm. tackles, more passes, more shots than anyone else on the field, single-handedly resurrecting the notion of a box-to-box midfielder. But mm-hmm. poor Brad Guzan.
Yeah.
He looked like a bewildered man aware he had a better defence in front of him at Chivas USA.
Huh.
I'm beginning to see Brad as an American in peril. And I'm speaking to you, President Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Your administration, it must act and extract him now.
Wonderful.
Send them in. By the way, I love it when you people write to us about Guzman.
Yeah.
Confusing him for Luis Guzman.
Yeah.
The Puerto Rican character actor. I can't think of two human beings that could be more different.
Yeah.
Say for Aston Villa, Randy Lerner, American owner, took over the club in 2006.
Yeah.
Sunk in enough cash to get into sixth place three times on the run, Davey.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is how far they've fallen. And then Lerner realised just how much it would take to get them higher than that.
Yeah.
Understood he didn't have that kind of oligarch cash and just folded. Poor Remy Gard is 5 games in charge, 2 points.
And now, of course, you don't need oligarch cash in order to go and be
too late.
Chasing the top four.
Too late. Arsenal fans cheered, you're going down with the Chelsea.
Yeah.
To Aston Villa fans, look on the bright side, lads.
Yeah.
You'll be the star for BeIN Sports Championship coverage next season.
Okay, Tottenham 1, Newcastle 2. The league's longest unbeaten streak comes to an end at 14 games thanks to an injury time winner from Spanish substitute Ayoze Perez. Newcastle win their second league game in a row for the first time in more than a year.
Wow.
And poke their head out of the relegation zone. Spurs remain fifth, 3 points adrift of the top four.
At Doug Wheat 2 tweeted us, men in blazers must be pleased by Spurs' return to form after 14 unbeaten weeks.
Yeah,
the streak is over. As any Golden State fan can tell you, all good streaks must one day die. This one came out of nowhere. Dyer, the Dyer Wolf, well-taken header.
Very good goal.
Set off what seemed like a coronation to top four team. That should have been on, Dave. What happened? They should have put the game away. Rob Elliott was in Who Wants to Sex Mutombo form, denying
Seen
Lamella.
Seen it before a lot of times at Chelsea in years of yore, Rog. It's these teams from the north, particularly teams in the northeast, come down, day out in London, having a great time. The team from London go ahead, but don't put them away when they had considerable chances to by halftime. And the fans get more into it, and the players start feeding off the energy and the fact that their fans are out singing the home fans. And Newcastle played with the kind of energy that we have barely seen from this team this season, Rog.
Yeah, I mean, if Bournemouth hadn't beaten Chelsea and United, ballads would currently be being written about the way Steve McLaren's men beat first Liverpool, then Spurs. This game was all about his substitutes, Mitrovic coming on and then Perez fantastically changing the game. But what was shocking was Spurs' inability to reimpose themselves on the match once mm-hmm. they conceded. It was pallid. Pochettino's teams do have a habit of falling away as the season grinds on, most noticeably in the last third. The Europa League may have done them in a little for this game, but this is a young Spurs team. It's going to be fascinating to see what lessons they learn from this disappointing loss as the season wears on.
Oh, so many good games this weekend, Rog. Liverpool 2, West Bromwich Albion 2. Liverpool snatch a point in the 96th minute when Divock Origi's long-range effort deflects past Boaz Myhill. After the game, Jurgen Klopp led the team hand-in-hand in front of the Kop to mark the greatest home draw against West Brom during his tenure as manager, that era.
A contest between beauty against brawn, it ended in a dead heat. Liverpool flicking, tricking, West Brom setting themselves up like a heavy bag, willing to be pounded by their opponent. Liverpool's opening goal was a work of art. Coutinho, oh magico, back for the first time since November, floated in the ball, and Lallana, all 5'8" of him, cushioned it down for Hendo to thrash it home. But West Brom, they understand the brutal truth about football. Crap goals and works of beauty count just the same. I believe this team works solely on crap goals in training, David.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to be able to execute, Rog.
Yeah, and once Mignolet air punched to the corner, Craig Dawson nodded home. I've got to say, Merseyside is turning into a part of England where corners are more deadly than penalties. Mm-hmm. Both Mignolet and Tim Howard under scrutiny. Second half was all Liverpool, total possession, which both teams expected. West Brom dared Liverpool to break them down. Liverpool zipped the ball around, but Benteke was like that one kid on a really amazing breakdancing crew, just couldn't do the worm.
Normally, you remember?
Normally he's only in the crew because he actually owns the boombox.
Yeah.
But then West Brom, predictably, took the lead. Jonas Olsen, glancing home a header from a... I've been reading a lot about Vikings recently.
Yeah, I love Vikings.
In order to win battles,
yeah,
they try and capture and kill their enemy's mm-hmm. leader by forming a wedge of about 50 soldiers and just charge towards the enemy, splitting the ranks and just knocking the leader out immediately. And I thought about that flying wedge Viking strategy every time I watch Olsen score a goal. He's an amazing player, alongside McCauley. Mm-hmm. And they're like Dan and Delaney at Palace, hard-working, organised, imposing. Mm-hmm. And for 95 minutes here, dominant.
Yeah, Liverpool struggling to figure a way to get back into the game, but throwing everything at it. And then in the 96th minute, Origi, with a long-range effort, once again a deflection, and it goes past Boaz Myhill, and the game is tied.
Yeah, I loved how he celebrated as if he meant his wild thrash that was going 10 yards wide to bank right back in. Crap undone by crap. Myhill collapsed on the floor as he recognised the irony. And then just the curiously emotional series of decisions by Klopp at the final whistle. Mm-hmm. The very public rejection of Tony Pulis's handshake. But then forcing his team. How would you describe it, Dave? It's a very Bundesliga tradition. It's an anathema to the Premier League. And it's only normally rolled out when you win the thing. But go on.
Well, he went wild on the sidelines and then refused the handshake and then led his team in a side-by-side, hand-by-hand salute to the cop. I mean, it was just extraordinary.
After a 2-2 draw of West Brom.
Yeah.
I think he was just excited the fans didn't leave him and make him feel lonely again.
Yeah.
I'd say, in his defence, it was probably a bit of lost in cultural translation, perhaps. But after the game, he said, it's the best I've felt since I've been here. Only 1 point, but it felt like three. He's eager to foster a deep connection between the fans and the players. Mm-hmm. Celebrating a point against West Brom at home definitely opens him up to ridicule. At Peter Hull 5 said, after the chorus line celebration, Klopp will be getting an open top bus out of storage if they get any kind of result next weekend against Watford. I say context is everything. If Liverpool had done that when Brendan Rodgers was manager, we would be pissing ourselves.
Yeah.
And though the players didn't look best pleased with this forced act of bonding, mm-hmm. Liverpool have won just one of their four home Premier League games under Jürgen. I think he wants to change that. He wants to foster a culture of invincibility, and he won't care about those who laughed at his gesture if it pays off in weeks to come.
Interesting. Okay, Rog, Crystal Palace 1, Southampton 0. That could be a significant result. Johan Cabaye's fifth goal of the season and smart saves from Welsh keeper Wayne Hennessy. See Super Alan Pardew's men past the Saints at Selhurst Park. Palace up to sixth, only 3 points out of the top four. And why not Palace, Rog?
Oh, the Blazercon derby. By the way, listen to Alan Pardew in the interview he recorded with us last Thursday. Fantastic insight from the Palace manager.
Sunderland 0, Watford 1. The Premier League underdog story that hasn't yet gone mainstream, Rog. Watford surging to 7th place, 4 points off the top 4, thanks to striker Odion Ighalo's 10th goal of the season.
Only thrown into the shade because of Jamie Vardy and Leicester.
Yeah.
But Watford, tiny Watford, storm up to 7th place. It's a remarkable achievement.
West Ham 0, Stoke 0. Another superb goalkeeping display from Stoke, and England's Jack Butland keeps West Ham at bay in a game more entertaining than the scoreline suggests. West Ham in 8th, but only 5 points off the top 4. The Potters stay in 11th. And finally, Rog, Norwich 1, Everton 1. Romelu Lukaku scores his 12th goal of the season. Wonderful goal before squandering a series of first-half chances. And in the 47th minute, the Canaries' Wes Houlihan a stabbed home a loose ball. Another crap goal, Rog, to earn Alex Neil's men a point. Roger, your thoughts and observations.
I lived a season's worth of emotions in just 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Confidence, wonder, thoughts of world domination, and then shock, frustration, despair, and numb defeat. AKA Arsenal fans' last 12 years lived in fast motion. It all began so well. Gerry D bubbling with confidence and an eagerness to play through balls that just appear impossible for mere mortals. He slipped that delicious ball that just invited Lukaku to posterise Sebastian Bessong like DeAndre Jordan over Greg Monroe. I was thinking Stockton to Malone, Montana to Rice, De La Feo to Lukaku, David.
Yeah, it is a potent goal-scoring combination, these two. They're forming a sort of a sub-Mahrez-Vardy duo, a sub-Giroud-Ozil duo, Rog.
He's the first Everton player to score in seven successive games since my childhood hero Bob Latchford in December 1975. By the way, anyone who wants to know about Everton's past, Latch's autobiography, A Different Road, has just come out. It's fantastic. Lukaku's just got confidence. He's going to score every time he gets the ball, even though he doesn't.
That's amazing. What an amazing observation.
Everton could have scored four or five. He had one-on-ones, so did Kone. There were bars hit. There were whiffs from up close. At Kenneth Knupel tweeted us, Lukaku taking the early lead in the new statistical category of shots nearly on goal or snog.
Snogs, yeah.
And like Spurs, Everton didn't kill off the game. And then they were powerless to shut it down. I don't know what they did in the locker room at halftime. Make love to a truck full of pies or something. Mm-hmm. It's just a movie I've seen so many times. They're glass jaw at corners. Mm-hmm. And Wes Houlihan slipped the ball into the net. Mm-hmm. Matt Cheatham, the Sky statistician, amazing stat this, leading by one goal this season, Everton have faced 12 shots on target. All 12 have gone in. He tweeted this, Tim Howard yet to make a save with a win on the line. Three draws in a row, 3 points when nine were within our grasp. And you talk about City and Liverpool being inconsistent game to game. Everton have all that inconsistency, but they do it within 90 minutes.
Yeah, and yet they're part of that nine-team peloton within 6 points of each other. Tottenham all the way down to West Brom, Rog. Champions League and Euro 2016 draws. Two massive tournament draws this past week. The Champions League round of 16 teams learn their fate Monday. Arsenal have drawn Barcelona. Chelsea get a Champions League rematch with PSG. And City will play Dynamo Kiev. They got the best draw, Rog.
They did. Hot balls in full effect, Davey. Mm-hmm. As they were in the Euro 16 draw.
Yes, Saturday, UEFA drew the groups for Euro 2016 in France.
There's now 24 of UEFA's 54 members who've qualified, which essentially means everybody apart from Scotland.
Yeah. Three teams will qualify from most of these groups, but the draws set up some wonderful, wonderful storylines upcoming.
Can we just reiterate your old quiz game knowledge about balls and when you use balls for a draw, David?
Well, of course, Rog. Years ago, I worked on a game show where we were giving away $1 billion, Rog.
$1 billion!
It's called Play for a Billion. And we bought an insurance policy, I believe from Berkshire Hathaway. Can't reveal how much it cost, but it cost several million to buy an insurance policy against a 1 in 1,000 chance that somebody would win $1 billion. And the way we decided, we had to then figure out how we would do the random draw to go and figure it out. And we sort of researched every single way would we do it. Computers, would we go and do it with sort of drawing of lots. And in the end, we decided we had a chimpanzee draw pool balls out of a rag. It was an amazing decision, but it was truly random.
What year was this?
This, I don't know, 2005, 2006. People thought I was insane when I came up with the chimpanzee idea. But we had a consultant, a guy who was a former head of the Florida Lottery, and I asked him at one point about those ping pong ball machines that I'd seen in the NBA lottery. And he said to me, he's laughed at me and said, the only reason you would ever use one of those machines is if you were trying to fix a draw, because they are so influenceable by humans, bipeds.
Hence you get England playing and losing to Wales, a team who Sports Illustrated delightfully spelled Wales, W-H-A-L-E-S.
Yeah, wonderful. I love England. They're good too, though. England. They're good. Very, very good. They're tough to beat at the back. When they dive in front of the ball,
bit slow on the break.
Little slow on the break. They don't score a lot, but they're very hard to score against.
They'll meet in the middle game at the Stade Bollier de Lyon-Lens on 16th of June, and that game is going to be the focus, maybe to both teams' detriment of the opening round.
Yeah.
But they also play Martin Skrtel, Slovakia and Russia in a group that both teams will fancy they can get through.
Yeah, absolutely. Pays de Galles. I love the name of Wales in French. Okay, Wednesday night, Abby Wambach will take the field for the USA one last time when they host China at the Superdome,
the Chinese,
in New Orleans as part of the team's victory tour.
Oh, she was
one of the greats.
The greatest of all time,
yeah.
Based on mental strength as much as natural skill. She's currently gearing up for a remarkable second act. I know she's going through a process of evaluating her next move. She is blessed with so many options. I have no doubt that for Abby Wambach, it will be the right one.
Absolutely. So her final game, the USA versus China in New Orleans, will be broadcast Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox Sports 1. Congrats to GFOP, U.S. men's national team striker Jordan Morris, and the rest of Stanford University's men's soccer on their NCAA national championship. Stanford Messi scored twice, including one goal just 87 seconds in, as the Cardinal down Clemson 4-0 Sunday in rainy Kansas City.
I was only surprised the man didn't get given the Heisman. But when Stanford plays soccer, I've got this mental picture of Larry Page, Julie Foudy, Elon Musk, Richard Sherman and Reese Witherspoon all sitting around the television together in LA to cheer them on.
Yeah.
But anyway, Jordan Morris, as a junior in college, still young, he's already achieved something Messi, Neymar and Ronaldo never have.
Mm-hmm.
Winning the NCAA championship.
Yeah.
And he was an 87-second goal scorer. And he said about scoring too early, this is why I love the man, Davo. He says, I love it. I think that whenever we go out and score, it helps to give me confidence and the rest of the team as well. So it's good to get one in there early. Take that, Davo. Seattle Sounders fans anticipate his imminent arrival at the club. I did give his phone number to Mr. Roberto Martinez at BlazerCon. Huh. I would love, love, love to see him in blue.
We will see, Rog. Okay, our first Raven is the winner of the coveted Guinness Men in Blazers Poet, Philosopher, Soccer Scribe Raven of the Week. And it is Dan Evanson, longtime GFOP and Arsenal fan. Side note, I became a fan when I first played FIFA 03 and didn't know how to switch teams. And as Arsenal was the first team alphabetically in England, I soon fell in love with Thierry Henry and Robert Perez. Anyway, I am facing a bit of a personal predicament. My sister just had a beautiful son 2 weeks ago and named him Oliver. I'm writing this during the Arsenal-Olympiacos game, and Giroud has just scored a hat-trick to give us the 3-0 lead and send us through to the knockout round of the Champions League as it stands. Now, as I see it, I have no choice but to name my firstborn son Olivier. Is it okay if I name my son Olivier if my sister's son is Oliver? Will this lead to confusion slash contempt from my family? Is there any other thing I can do in this situation? Please advise, as I'm sure one of Roger's siblings has likely named their son Romelu, and he therefore has some experience on the matter. Thanks in advance for your help on this crucial issue.
What a question.
Yeah.
I don't have a Romelu.
Yeah.
I do have a hippo.
Like
I've got a nephew.
You got a hippo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Dan, it's tough, this one, because Jewish tradition says you shouldn't name your kid after someone else in your family who's still living.
Yeah.
So I definitely warn you away from going Olivier when there's an Oliver there.
Yeah.
But the good, you've got so many exquisite Arsenal options.
Yeah.
Baby Arsene.
Yeah.
That's a lovely name.
That's a lovely name.
Though I've got to say, Arsene Wenger's one of a small band of men I can't actually imagine as a baby. Can you imagine him as a child?
No, not at all. I don't believe he ever was a child.
Call it anything but Theo. Theo
Evanson. Not a bad name, though.
Mesut's a lovely name.
Mesut Evanson.
It means happy in Turkish.
Yeah.
Per.
Yeah.
P-E-R, short, sweet.
Aaron.
Means
Aaron
stone or rock.
Aaron Everton. That's a good name.
My favourite. Mm-hmm. And if I was going to have a baby and was an Arsenal fan, I'd do this one.
Mm-hmm.
Go Nacho. And I know he may be leaving in the transfer window, so have that baby now.
Yeah. Nacho Evanson. Very good.
Done and dusted.
Okay, our second Raven is from Milo Jacques. 2015 has been some year. Chelsea had it, lost it. Louis van Gaal has truly lost it. I can't believe that people see Man United as being even worse what's going on there than Chelsea, and yet they're sitting fourth in the table. Jurgen Klinsmann is fighting to regain it. Football has brought so much happiness into my life this year, both real and thanks to EA Sports FIFA. But what have been the moments that you have both savoured and will remember longer than a Tim Sherwood managerial stint? Yours in football and Guinness, Milo. Milo. Milo.
It's been an amazing year, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken us from Buffalo to Pamplona.
Yeah.
And even more exotically, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I've loved every second.
Mm-hmm.
What are your moments?
You go first, Rog. I need a moment to compose myself.
I will trade off.
Okay.
Okay. First one for me. Third best.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the Premier League this season.
Yeah.
Quality of the football may not be the best, according to Alan Pardew on last week's pod.
Mm-hmm.
But it is making for just the most thrilling drama. A hint to the future where the huge television deal which kicks in next season makes every mid-level team a mutated superforce. So to Bournemouth, Crystal Palace, to Spurs, to Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, to more.
Oh, I missed.
I left Everton out, that you'll notice.
I miss last season, Rog, that also happened this year. Last season was an amazing season in the Premier League. Yes, it's wonderful what's happening with these smaller teams, but I miss the hegemony of what happened with the big clubs. Chelsea actually won the title this calendar year. It seems like that happened several decades ago at this point, but it was still nice winning it. It's just been very sad.
When you see those photos of Jose Mourinho like lying down smiling on the field under the League Cup and trying to be like
does
devilish
not appear
rakish.
Like it was this year.
Another lifetime, mate. By the way, when you say hegemony, I think of my criminology teacher, Mr. Brownlee. Gramsci's theory of hegemony.
Yeah, hegemony.
Hegemony.
Okay, Rog, number two. What is the second thing?
BlazerCon.
Yeah.
Being together with so many GFOPs travelling from all over the country and all of the Premier League, the Bundesliga, the American soccer talent who came to meet them. If I had to pick one minute, Dave, and I shut my eyes as I do this, I'm in a bar, it's late at night, there's 1,000 GFOPs stuffed in there, and Steve Parrish is raising a glass to the entire room. Oh, yeah, we're going to release a slew of the presentations from BlazerCon over the holiday period and hopefully bring a little bit of that atmosphere to the wider Men in Blazers audience who couldn't be in Brooklyn, in the hope that you can all join us next November.
Yeah, BlazerCon was amazing. That would have made them my top three as well, Rog. But I'm going to say something different. Pamplona, Rog, the running of the Bulls. Our first foreign trip with each other. We flew off to Madrid. We got in that little minibus. We went...
You forgot about Rio already, mate.
Yeah, I've already forgot
you
about Rio.
You blacked out Rio. Repressed Rio.
Oh, no, that was a terrible foreign trip. This was a really fun one. The most amazing, amazing time we had up there. Moved by the Navarran culture, Rog. The wonderful people we got to work with in Pamplona. That amazing, insane, totally bonkers event that we were covering on a very flimsy tower every morning at about 5 a.m. But really, we had an amazing time with our entire team, with producers Jen, JW, and Lexi out there, and all of our locals over there in Pamplona. That was an amazing experience this year.
Oh, around the same time, Dave, my number one moment of 2015, the US women's national team, and just their glorious achievement over the summer, dreaming a dream they dreamt since 1999, they're making it real, a victory teased out of a sluggish start, and then they made believers out of a giddy nation. Immense television ratings for the final games, which put NBA and NCAA Final Four to shame. And just the personalities of these women. They're so different in wonderful ways as individuals, so powerful as a collective. And I guess the thing I love most about them is the ultimate legacy of their achievement. What I hope is the millions of young girls who are now inspired to follow in their footsteps and aspire to represent the US in decades to come. Raising my glass to you, Davo, to glory.
Yeah, to glory, Rog. Finally, for me, it's got to be something about our GFOPs. GFOPs who just impress us, move us, blow us away all the time. Most remarkable experience this year, Rog, was going up to Buffalo when we were working with Yahoo and NFL Films, a remarkable project we got to work on. Such a joy to meet everybody within the Buffalo Bills organization and the Jacksonville Jaguars organization. But the highlight for me is going to that wonderful soccer bar, Mesque, and just at very short notice tweeting out we were going to be there, and the hundreds of GFOPs who turned out in that fabulous soccer bar, which is, you know, I would say representative of this wonderful GFOP and soccer culture that's grown up all around this country. And we had an amazing time. You treated us so well, inspired us so much. And I think about that evening. I think about all of you all the time. And thank you so much for listening and everything you do for us.
I feel like Fonson Company looking on at Man City in the rain.
You always
feel
like
that. It's
not
tears in my eyes. It's just the rain, Dave.
Okay, Roger. Your weekend, God, it goes on. It goes on this year that will not end. Your weekend looks like this, courtesy of Mini USA. I also love filming that mini commercial, by the way, up in Buffalo for Mini of Buffalo. It's a mini commercial that never saw the light of day, but it was one of the great experiences of this year. One day, years from now, we might be able to release that.
It's because you insisted on doing it with
no, it had
no
nothing
pants
to
on
do with me. Oh, no, that is true, but that had nothing to do with me. Newcastle versus Aston Villa, 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday on the NBC television network.
Go easy on Brad. Go easy on him, lads.
I wonder why they selected Newcastle versus Aston Villa for the network game.
One of the world's greatest Americans is in peril. We must extract him.
Watford versus Liverpool. That's 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time Sunday on NBCSN. And not technically the weekend, but Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Arsenal host Manchester City on NBCSN. There are many ways to connect to us. One is through our Amazon Emporium, which helps keep the show going. Anytime you go on Amazon for items, big or small, just click off the Emporium page, and Men in Blazers gets a tiny percentage that allows us to cover the cost of creating the show. What are you putting the Amazon Emporium?
Well, final book of the year, David. Oh. It's a good one.
Yeah.
0-0.
It's about
zero.
Vikings.
No, I read that over the weekend. 0-0-0.
Yeah.
By Roberto Saviano,
uh-huh.
The remarkably audacious author of the brilliant mafia expose, mm-hmm. Gomorra, the writing of which meant that he now lives his life under constant guard. Mm-hmm. But in this book, he examines the global contours of the cocaine industry.
The cocaine industry.
Yeah, tracing the rise and fall of the Colombian cartels, the narco states fostered in huge parts of Mexico.
Mm.
And the book's ultimately about human motivation, weakness, and the hunger for power, which is also, and I mean this truly, why I love following football. But I couldn't put this beautiful book down. It's occasionally poetic, sadly never sourced, but it is an amazing piece of work.
Okay, Rog, I'm not putting in a book. May not surprise you, but I'm also getting out of the kitchen for a change. I'm going into general DIY. I've been in the market for an 8-foot ladder. I've got a 6-foot ladder. I've got a 4-foot ladder, but I needed something a little bit taller for a job I was working on this past weekend.
George Morrison size.
And I purchased the Werner 368 250-pound duty rating aluminum. I love that word. Aluminum.
We say aluminium.
Aluminum step ladder. It's an 8-foot ladder. It's very light. It has a 250. It can support a 250-pound man. That's me and a large child. But it is just a fantastic lightweight ladder. It's lovely. It's silver. It's yellow. It was a bargain at $119, $118.99 on Amazon.
You could dunk with that beauty, Davey.
Yeah, absolutely.
Slip-resistant
traction trad steps.
Will you make love to your aluminium ladder?
Yeah.
We're going to take a break for a short period of time.
Yeah.
We'll be back on January the 4th with the Men in Blazers.
I'm already exhausted.
With the great Kevin Doyle.
Uh-huh.
A hero of mine.
From the Colorado Rapids and the Irish national team.
Not that one.
Oh, the one from Downton Abbey.
Mr. Mosley himself.
There we go.
Is going to come
touch
on
of the Latin
and talk about balding. And we got offered pretty well anybody from Downton Abbey, and we just went immediately for Mosley because I wanted to talk to him about the inner Mosley that lies within me. It lies within all of us. We're also going to be on December the 28th on our kind of not Boxing Day, but close to Boxing Day.
Boxing Day.
What's the day? It's in the middle, right between Boxing Day and New Year's.
New Year's Eve.
I'm sure there should be a name for it, but we're going to review the whole season.
Olympico.
With...
Rebecca Lua.
We just taped it.
And her baby.
We just taped it today.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
She looks amazing.
Yeah.
She sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun taping it.
Yeah.
It's going to run pretty well after the football.
Yeah.
6 and 10:30. Oh, I knew that. 6 and 10:30 it's going to run. It's very lovely.
She's such an amazing woman. The fact that she says yes to us. Frankly, we didn't want to do this. And we said to NBC, we'll only do it if Rebecca Lowe comes down. Thinking that she would never agree. Of course she agreed, and we did it, and it was a joy to go and make this show.
We want to thank everyone at the end of this year at NBC.
Yeah.
Great, great colleagues. All of our two Robbies, not just one Robbie, but two Robbies. The wonderful Kyle and his family. Arlo.
Yeah.
Graham.
Yeah.
Lee. We wish them all happiness and health and grateful to them for the joy that they all bring into our life. I also want to thank the small but glorious Men in Blazers team.
Yeah.
I'd say they're the Bournemouth of podcasting.
Yeah.
Jen Simons, the most the most remarkable human being in television.
Yeah, she is.
Who also jumped in on BlazerCon.
Yeah.
And made everything real.
Yeah.
David Zipley.
Yeah.
Who has skills. The only person I've ever met who's like him is Hansi in Fargo 2. Producer Lexi Tannenholtz.
Yeah.
Who's like the three Chaim sisters if you just combine them into one human being.
Yeah.
And JW, the amazing JW.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing makes me happier than when we post an Insta of JW and people write underneath and say...
More magic, David.
Say how much he looks like David Silva.
Yeah.
He's the most capable human being I've ever worked with.
Aww.
Wish him all health, happiness and no relegation in the year ahead, David.
Rog, lots of
other ways to connect to us. You can now watch entire episodes of our crap TV show on NBC Sports, Live Extra, Apple TV and Roku. It's also up on our website, menandblazers.com, also on menandblazers.com, a place to sign up for our newsletter, The Raven, which we produce with our partner Guinness. One of the items in this week's Raven, Rog, a new holiday-themed playlist on our Spotify account, men_in_blazers. menandblazers.wikispaces.com/a wonder of the modern world. You can follow us on Twitter at Embassy Davies, at Rog Bennett, at Men in Blazers, on Instagram at Men in Blazers, at Embassy_Davies. On Facebook, we got one of those as well. We got a subreddit, meninblazers.reddit.com, maintained by GFOP's Akshay, Calvin, and Alex. Happy holidays to the three of you. You can always send your Ravens to the crap part of Soho. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com.
We love your Ravens. For the last time this year, Davey.
Vendorpunk Rog.
War Pig.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
Explosure.
Courage.
Take that, Gloria.
Is that your analysis?
To tweed.
Abrigado. Rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fighting America. Happy and healthy end to the year. We can't wait to see you in 2016.
Yeah.
I love you, Davey.
I love you, Rog. Merry everything and happy always.
Be safe.